In 2018, I broke up with my boyfriend and was nearly homeless. I moved across the country with him, and as life sometimes happens, it didn't work out. Unfortunately, I didn't know anyone where I was, and I had nowhere to go. I was living out of my car for a couple of days until I found a beautiful little apartment complex that was accepting new tenants. I went in and pleaded my case to the management team there, and thankfully they pulled some strings and got me in right away. I didn't have much to move in at first, since most of the stuff I left at my last place. As I slowly started to gather furniture, the place started to feel like a home. My cute little one-bedroom studio apartment became my pride and joy. It didn't take long for my ex-boyfriend to find where I was, and I kid you not, he would drop off boxes full of my stuff and leave it on the front steps of the apartment building. A real classy boy, that one. The apartments I was living in offered garages for your car or storage. Most of the tenants used it for storage. The only thing that wasn't ideal was that you were sharing the garage with another random tenant, and they weren't sorted out by the building or apartment number, but basically by whatever one was available. I got a garage unit that thankfully wasn't that far of a walk from my apartment. They had one left, and I felt incredibly lucky. When I made my way to the garage and opened it up, I was surprised to see an older man sitting in there just rocking in a chair. He was angry as soon as I opened the door and he shouted, "Hey, get out of here, this is my garage." I was a bit uncomfortable, but I always stand my ground. In a very polite voice, I responded to the man, "I'm sorry, sir, but I just purchased the other half of this garage for my storage. I'm sorry, but you'll have to share now." The man didn't like this. He got up out of his chair and made his way to the door and he started shouting, "Well, I don't think so." The man literally started to grab my boxes and throw them back into the parking lot. As I stood there, blown away by the antics of this man, he continued to complain, "I pay for this space, it's mine. Get your crap out of there." Not wanting to escalate this anymore, I went back to the office and told the woman in charge that the old guy wouldn't let me in the garage. She looked annoyed as if this had been a problem before, and she went down there and laid down the law with this older guy. They went back and forth, but ultimately it ended with the guy moving his stuff to his side of the line. Yes, there was a literal line in the middle of the garage separating the two sides for each tenant. I brought my stuff in there as quickly as I could because I wanted nothing to do with this guy. He grumbled to himself the entire time I brought my stuff over and I just ignored him. The next couple of days I had a bad feeling about my stuff. I didn't have anything insanely valuable in there, but most of the stuff in those boxes were personal belongings or sentimental to me in some way. One night, early in the evening, I decided to go check on my stuff and I couldn't believe what I saw. The man sitting in his chair rocking back and forth and wearing one of my scarves. I started to yell at the guy and he responded, "This is my scarf, little lady." And that's when I noticed that he had gone through all of my boxes and thrown my belongings all over the garage. Clothes, paperwork, furniture, everything on my side were thrown all over the place. I called him out on it and he became incredibly hostile and said, "I didn't touch your stuff. Now you relax." I went back to the management of the apartments and told them everything. She approached the man and they went at it again. The old man denied touching my stuff and claimed that it was like that when he came into the garage. I didn't buy it, and neither did the manager. I believe she threatened to evict the guy and told him that he could no longer have access to the garage. He had 2 days to get all of his belongings out of there. The man was upset and screaming. I almost felt bad for him until I remembered all of my stuff on the ground. The man left the garage enraged. I could hear him screaming all the way through the parking lot. When he was gone, I closed the door and started to pick up my belongings. Curiosity got the better of me and I started to glance at his side. This guy had a ton of interesting stuff when I stopped to look at his side. It wasn't just junk and clutter, but really unbelievable antiques. He had stuff from old wars, old movie posters, books, and anything cool you can think of. It was like a vault of treasure. I continued to put my stuff away, and that's when I noticed my scarf. He was right. The scarf he was wearing was, in fact, his scarf. I felt horrible and thought I owed the guy an apology. I even decided to myself that if I don't see him within the next 2 days, I'll tell the manager that he can store his stuff in my garage. I just don't want him in there unless I'm there. The next morning, I woke up to the sound of sirens outside. I looked out from my balcony and I could see that the sirens were outside of my garage. I ran down there and I couldn't believe my eyes. The older man looked like he had been hit by a bus, but was standing up talking to the police and the manager of the apartments. I looked back at the car, and it was insane. It was my ex-boyfriend. I ran over to the police and asked what was going on, and basically my ex had been breaking into my garage unit and going through all my stuff, basically just trying to make my life a nightmare. He wasn't trying to rob or steal anything. The old man knew that he was innocent and went down to the garage and waited all night for something to happen. Around 5 a.m., my ex started breaking in, and once he went over to my boxes and threw stuff around, the old man confronted him. A brief fight ensued, and the old guy was like some decorated war hero, and even at his advanced age, he was able to take down my ex. I thanked the man and tried to give him something, but he just wanted his garage back. I'm so thankful that this man cared enough about his stuff that he waited all night to prove that he was innocent. And thankfully, he stopped him when he did, because I don't know how far my ex would have gone or what he was capable of. I fed the old man leftovers for the year that I lived in that apartment, and I have since moved home with my parents. Don't judge a book by its cover, because sometimes it's the people we least expect that become our guardian angels. A couple of years ago, when I was in between jobs, I moved into an apartment to save money. The apartment complex was beautiful. It was a smaller complex located right in the heart of a quiet and nestled community. Most of the residents in the complex were older folks that were retired and just didn't need the space of an entire house. When I was moving into the building, I noticed another young person like me watching from one of the windows. It was a beautiful girl, someone that personally I would consider to be out of my league. Unfortunately, my career didn't allow for much dating. After moving in, I noticed that often, I would come or go from the parking lot and I would see the woman looking at me. I just assumed that she was nosy or something like that, and I didn't think for one second that she had any interest in me. Down the road from the complex was a grocery store that was very convenient to stop in on my way home from work. One afternoon after work, when I stopped in the store to grab some dinner, I ended up physically running into the girl who had been staring at me for a few days now, and I literally mean that we physically collided with each other. I was turning into an aisle with my head on my phone and she was walking out of the aisle. In a nervous voice, she said, "Oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. I'm just an idiot sometimes." I started to say it was okay, but stopped when I realized who it was. Once everything clicked, I said, "Hey, are you the girl that lives in my building?" She started to smile and blush and then said, "Yeah, that's me." I'm usually the one who gets nervous and blushes uncontrollably in these kinds of situations, so it was nice that the heat was on someone else for a change. She made some comments about her stupid cheeks turning red, and I responded by telling her that in high school, my friends used to call me a cherry pie because my face was always red. We both laughed as I diffused the tension. We made small talk for a little while, right there in the store, and then that evolved into a real conversation. Finally, I worked up the courage to ask if she wanted to come over for dinner tonight since we were practically neighbors. She smiled and looked thrilled by the offer. She accepted and said that she would be over at around 7, and we exchanged numbers and went about our shopping. I was so excited and nervous about my date with this very attractive neighbor that I had. I realized that I only had about an hour to clean my apartment and get ready. I hadn't had a real date since my freshman year of college, over 4 years ago, so I was admittedly a train wreck in my mind. I even remember while I was cleaning the apartment, I got a text from her that said, "I can't wait for tonight," with a heart. Before I knew it, it was 7, and she was knocking on my door. The first several hours were amazing. We talked, ate dinner, had some wine, and just had a great evening. I felt like this was my first real adult date, and I was proud of how it was unfolding. Late in the evening, I was ready for bed. And this was a weeknight, and I had to work the next day, and I could tell that she wanted to stay, but I made it clear that I wasn't ready for anything further than this. She was understanding, and we said goodnight at around 11 p.m. When I walked her to her door, which sat about 30 feet from my door, I kissed her goodnight, and she smiled. I walked inside my apartment with an overwhelming feeling of joy and happiness. I woke up at around 3 a.m. that morning just to use the bathroom, and I noticed something weird as I walked into the hall. and the light that was shining under the door to my apartment was a shadow, like someone was standing in front of my door. I figured it was my tired eyes just playing tricks on me, so I didn't worry too much. After the bathroom, when I walked by the door again, I noticed that the obstruction to the light was still there. I quietly went over to the door and looked through the peephole in the door, and standing right outside my door was the girl that I had just shared an entire evening with. She looked like she was mumbling something under her breath, but I wasn't sure. If I ever look through one of those holes, they're not very clear sometimes, so I watched for a few seconds and she didn't move at all. I snuck back into my room and grabbed my phone. I made sure that it was silent and went back to the door, and I texted her phone and said, "Hey, I can't sleep, but I just wanted to let you know that I had a great time tonight." Seconds later, she grabbed her phone from her pocket, and with no expression on her face, she responded with, "Me too," with an exclamation point, "I can't wait to see you again." I waited for a moment, and then sent another text that said, "I'm surprised you're awake, what are you up to?" Her response turned the butterflies in my stomach to stone, when she responded with, "Oh, just laying in bed, watching Netflix." I couldn't understand why she was standing there and lying about it. I didn't respond to her text right away. I had no idea what to say to this woman or how to approach a situation like this. While I was thinking of something to say, she texted me again, this time saying, "If you want, I can come back, or you can come here." The text was followed by a bunch of emojis. I started to type a response but kept deleting whatever I typed. While I was typing, she texted me again and said, "You have nothing to be afraid of." And that text hit me differently for some reason. I finally sent a simple text that just read, "Thanks for the offer, but I'm really tired." I looked through the hole as she read the message, and still, with no expression on her face, she put the phone back in her pocket and looked right at the peephole. I knew she couldn't see me, but the horror that I felt when I sort of made eye contact with the woman through the door was almost indescribable. The look on her face was not the same look I had just admired that evening prior. Her eyes looked cold, and I have no idea what her intentions were, but I just felt like they weren't good. I know I'm not good at dating, but I do know standing outside someone's door in the middle of the night motionless is not normal behavior. I decided to text her one last time and said, "Hey, did you hear anything funny in the hall? I thought I heard a knock on my door." This was my poor attempt to try and fish something out of her, or at least elicit some reaction. She looked at the text for a minute, then back at the peephole with her cold eyes, as if though she knew I was there. And without moving from her position, she texted me one last time that said, "You're a smart boy. Very smart. Sleep tight." She put her head back down, and after about 5 minutes of just standing there, she turned around and went back to her apartment. She looked like she had something tucked in the back of her pants, but looking through the peephole, this could have just been my imagination, so I wasn't sure. I texted her the next day and she never responded. Even though she lived a few doors down, I never did run into her again. I left a note for her one time and slipped it under her door and still never heard from her. I never told the apartment management because I didn't really think anything could be done. It was an unnerving and terrifying experience for me, but I had no proof other than a few text messages that didn't show anything legal or really make any sense. I never saw her again, which is insane considering that I lived at this apartment for 6 months after this experience. The curtains were always shut when I would get home from work, and I never crossed paths with her in the hallway. Now, I know the story isn't your typical, "Oh God, I'm gonna die" story, but to put yourself in my shoes, I guarantee you wouldn't want to be me. The memory of that look in her eyes still haunts me to this day. Friends have always joked with me that she probably was just looking for some adult companionship, but I promise you this was different. Be careful out there because you never know what kind of intentions people have deep down.
During the spring of 2004, I was 19, even though I looked about 14. I was 5'0" and weighed about 100 pounds. That's if I was carrying laundry. My parents and aunt were vacationing in Mexico. I had decided to opt out and house sit for my aunt. I figured it would be a nice opportunity to have a quiet place to study for my upcoming exams. And all I really had to do was clean the pool, collect the mail, and restock the fridge with groceries. I also had a plan of action that involved emptying her safe and rescuing her car in the event of wildfires. Her place was high up in the hills of Southern California, with a terrific view of Long Beach. I mostly spent my time in the massage chair in the guest bedroom, playing music in the background while I pored over my psychology notes. Occasionally I would sit out on the balcony and work on my tan, or use the treadmill in the basement, but I mostly was secluded in the air conditioning trying to be productive. Every night I would set the alarm and make sure the security cameras were working before I went to bed. But on the fourth night of my stay, I was really focused on the books and forgot to set the alarm after it got dark. At about 1:30 a.m., I paused to take a break. That's when I realized how late it was. My stomach sank as I remembered that the basement door was unlocked, and I had to secure it before setting the alarm. Before heading downstairs, I wandered into the study to get a look at the security cameras just to be safe. I remembered thinking to myself, what are the chances that someone may actually be inside the house? As soon as I finished processing that thought, I saw the figure on the basement stairs. I remembered my mouth falling open and making a small croaking sound. There was a middle-aged balding man with glasses slowly making his way up the stairs, and to make the situation even more unnerving, in one of his hands he was holding a balloon. I stared at the cameras as he reached the top of the basement stairs and looked around before cautiously setting foot into the kitchen. My first thought was to slam the door, lock it, and call the cops. But deep down, I knew it would take the police between 10 and 12 minutes just to make it out here, and in that time, this guy could easily overpower me and drag me into the night. I suppose I could have hidden somewhere as well, but I didn't like the idea of trying to stay quiet while he wandered from room to room, searching for me. Instead, I decided to go on the offensive and try something, and it was both incredibly daring and amazingly stupid. I tiptoed back into my room, turned up the music, and then made a loud production of exiting the room, pounding my feet down the hall. I called out as loud as possible, "Marcus, I swear I heard something downstairs. Put on your shirt and grab the key to the gun cabinet." I was positive my voice was quivering as I said it, but I figured the music playing in the background would hide that fact well enough. I paused for a few seconds, waiting to see if he would call my bluff. But when all I heard was the silence from down below, I power walked back into the study, locked the door, and checked the cameras. Sure enough, he was scampering out of the basement door like a frightened squirrel. I watched him run across the backyard, around the pool, and disappear between the hedges. As soon as he was clear of the house, he let go of the balloon, and I watched it from my window as it lazily floated away towards the Pacific. I ran downstairs, locked the basement door, set the alarm, and called the cops. I also called my parents and aunt and told them what happened, asking them how I could rewind the footage to show the police. My aunt asked me why I didn't just hit the panic alarm on the security pad, and I had to admit that I hadn't even thought of that. To make a long story short, the police caught the guy a week later. He was sleeping in his car in a grocery store parking lot. Everyone always asked me what I thought the balloon was all about, and if I had to guess, I think it was a gift. This guy must have seen me a few times outside the house, surmised that I was alone, and assumed I was much younger than I really was. I have no idea if the guy is still in prison, but regardless of where he is, I kind of hope he hears this and feels stupid. He got scared away by nothing but the empty threat of a panicked girl with the strength of a malnourished gerbil. So this happened last year when I was house-sitting for my neighbor. He was in the hospital for a few days recovering from surgery, and I had been asked to stay in the house and keep an eye on his cats. The house was pretty small, but it was on a nice wide-open property by the woods. And there was a tiny swinging cat flap on the kitchen door, where the cats could come and go as they pleased. The flap led into a screened-in back porch, and the house only had one bedroom. So I chose to sleep on the couch in the living room. After cleaning up, feeding the cats and watching some TV, I shut off all the lights and laid back on the couch. I had my phone out and was casually scrolling through Facebook when I heard the flap swinging back and forth. From where I was in the living room, I couldn't see the door because the counter was in the way, but I glanced over to see one of the cats scamper over and leap up on my legs. I gave it a welcoming pat on the head and continued scrolling. After another minute, I heard the cat door make a noise again, a soft squeak. This time, I didn't even glance over, figuring it was the second cat following the first into the house. Another few moments passed, then I heard the squeaking again, and then after another moment, it squeaked a third time. I looked up from my phone, wondering why the second cat was jumping in and out like that. I was wondering if I would have to scoop it up and put it in the bedroom. The door continued to squeak for another couple of minutes as the second cat continued to jump in and out. I finally decided that I had enough. I put my phone down and sat up on the couch. I began to stretch. As I did, I happened to glance behind the couch, and my blood froze. The second cat was curled up in its bed in the corner, and the first cat was still nestled between my legs. My confusion turned to fear instantly. Was there another animal on the back porch? Another cat, maybe? I slowly stood up and carefully made my way over to the back door, tiptoeing across the carpet in my socks. The door made a squeaking noise again. I peered around the counter and felt the sensation of my heart leaping up into my throat. And at the same moment, my stomach dropped. By the faint rays of the nightlight in the hallway, I saw an arm reaching through the cat door, straining to get at the knob. The fingertips were brushing at the lock. For a few short seconds, all I could do was stare in terror, frozen by the surreal silent reality of what I was experiencing. It almost didn't feel real. The severity of the situation hit me, and I realized that if the intruder got in, I wasn't going to stand a chance. I grabbed a large two-pronged fork that was used for flipping steaks on a grill, and in one swift motion, I stabbed at the arm right below the wrist as hard as I could. There came a thunderous scream of pain from the other side of the door. And the arm was immediately retracted through the flap, but the fork had impaled the intruder, so it caught itself on the door. That produced a second loud scream, and the arm was wrenched violently outside. I heard the clatter of the fork on the ground, and then I heard footsteps sprint across the back porch and out the screen door. I immediately turned on the outside lights and caught the glimpse of a figure running towards the woods. Instead of calling the cops, I scooped up both cats, stuffed them into the same carrier, grabbed my phone, my shoes, and sprinted out to my car, which was thankfully parked inside the garage. I drove up the road a couple of miles to my place, and once I was safely inside, I called the cops. It took them half an hour to get to my place, and then another half hour of questioning before they continued down the road to check out my neighbor's house. They told me that there was no sign that the screen door had been broken into, and aside from the bloodstains, there was no sign of the intruder. They put out an alert to local hospitals for a man with a stab wound on his right arm. The following morning, the police brought a dog out to follow the scent, but whoever the lucky bastard was, he was never caught. I kept the cats at my place until my neighbor was out of the hospital. It still shakes me to my soul, the idea that the stranger chose that house in the middle of nowhere, trying to get inside. And if I hadn't got off the couch when I did, this may have ended very differently. Back in May of 2010, while in desperate need of cash, I agreed to house sit for one of my old high school teachers. He had contacted me via Facebook and asked me if I would be willing to water his plants, collect his mail, and clean up the place while he went out of town for a couple of days. He didn't specify where he was going, but he agreed to pay me $400 for 2.5 days, with half up front, so I agreed. I never really liked him in high school. He was teaching classic literature, and he always seemed to enjoy pointing out any illustrations that in any way featured nudity. His eyes always seemed hungry and he tended to wheeze like he was out of breath, even though he was kind of a small guy. My friends and I used to refer to him as Mr. Liptit. When I arrived at his place, the key was beneath the mat, and $200 were in an envelope on the kitchen table. I turned on my music, watered the plants, cleaned and vacuumed the ground floor, and made myself dinner. I found his house to be extremely boring. It was filled with old books, stacks of newspapers, and ancient-looking furniture that didn't really look comfortable to sit in. I settled into my sleeping bag on the guest bed, but I had a hard time staying asleep. It seemed that every 5 minutes there was another strange noise coming from the house, and it would put me on edge. The following morning, I went back to my own house, had breakfast, and took a shower before coming back and cleaning the second floor. Upon entering the guest bedroom, there was the faint smell of something in the air that definitely had not been there before. And what's more, I could have sworn that my sleeping bag was in a slightly different position when I had left it that morning. I started getting a bad vibe. I decided that night that I would sleep downstairs in the living room. I finished cleaning just after 10 p.m. I made some popcorn and enjoyed some cable TV, which I didn't have at my place. Around 11, I shut off the TV, wrapped myself up in my sleeping bag, and tried to drift off. I was tossing and turning for a bit, and just as I began to doze off, there came a click of the doorknob turning in the other room. I glanced over, and I swear by any god you choose, Mr. Liptek emerged from the pantry wearing only his socks. He then slowly turned the corner and made his way upstairs. I grabbed my phone and my keys and exited out the back door quietly. I ran around front to get into my car and sped home, where I immediately called the cops. I didn't know exactly how to explain the situation to them. I mean, he wasn't breaking and entering. It was his house. But when I explained to the operator that he had deceived me into thinking that he was gone, they sent out a patrol car. I had to collect the stuff that I had left at his house anyway. When the police arrived, Mr. Liptek answered the door wearing my sleeping bag over his shoulders. The police discovered a butler's cupboard, which was a secret room in the pantry that I wasn't aware of, where he had been hiding with a digital camera. He had taken a few dozen photos of me all around the house, most of which when I was sleeping. I showed the police the Facebook messages he sent me, assuring me that he would be out of town, and they arrested him. I collected all my remaining stuff, but left the sleeping bag. I didn't waste any time getting a restraining order against him. Mr. Liptek made bail, but actually died of a heart attack a few weeks later, after being rear-ended in his car at a stoplight. I never got the rest of my money.